back, hour two. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backtrend, with you on this Saturday morning. Again, very busy program. If you missed any portion of the first half of the show, my interviews with Dave Grenning from the Daily Racing Form, previewing the big races at Saratoga today, and a conversation about some of the other topics pertaining to racing at the Spa, or my interview with Cormac Brennick a short time ago, the Keeneland Director of Sales, simply go to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows at your leisure. I updated you on the poll question moments ago. If you missed it, the poll question presented by OwnerView and the Thoroughbred Owner Conference, which morning line favorite is most likely to win today? Gave you three choices, CZ Rocket, Mischievous Alex, or Channel Maker. And if you want to weigh in, all you have to do is go to at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And if you don't do social media, you can email your response to me. Which morning line favorite is most likely to win today? Email me, mike@horseracingradio.net. So far, 45% of you saying it's CZ Rocket, 32% saying it's Channel Maker, and only 23% saying Mischievous Alex is the most likely morning line favorite to win in their respective race later today. I now welcome the trainer of Mischievous Alex, that is Safi Joseph Jr. Safi, good morning. How do you change everybody's mind and let them know this is the horse that's going to win today?
Good morning, Mike. How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Doing well.
Hello?
There he is. Safi, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, we got him. Safi, I was asking you how you change people's minds about Mischievous Alex. Our listeners think that he's the least likely of the morning line favorites to win their respective stakes race today. What do you tell them to change their mind?
I mean, his record speaks for itself as far as when he's going 6-7. He's 2-for-2 at 6, and he's quite good at 7 furlongs. Last time he tried to Met Mile, and that's probably stretching him a bit. We had to chase Nick's goal to keep Nick's goal on this up front. And I thought he ran respectably. Coming into this race, he's coming back to what he wants to do best, 6 furlongs, and he's trained as good as a horse can train going into a race. I think all being well, he's going to run a bang-up race.
On paper, his workouts are very, very good. Excellent, as a matter of fact, since the Metropolitan defeat. You mentioned the turn back in distance. What exactly are you seeing from Mischievous Alex that leads you to believe he's sitting on a big race today?
I mean, he's always trained well for us. As far as working in the morning, he's a very good workhorse. He has quick acceleration. I think what leads to more confidence in his race is just knowing he's getting back to a distance that he's very good at. At this kind of sprint distance, he's speedy enough to put himself in a good spot, but he finishes strongly at it. And I think that's where a lot of confidence comes from. IRAD's been worked in his last two works at Saratoga, and he's going there with a lot of confidence with him also.
Since you've gotten him into your barn, he's rattled off three consecutive wins before being defeated in the Met Mile. You said maybe that was a bit too far for him. The turn back in distance should certainly help. You know, one thing that I notice about this horse, Safi, is that he's not a need to lead the type. He has a pressing style, and you got to figure in a race like this that could suit him very, very well.
Most definitely. And that's why you feel so confident with him at 6 furlongs. Met Mile, two horses he beat in that race have come back to win. Obviously, Nick Skull came back to win at Prairie Meadows, and then Dr. Pulse came back to win at Monmouth. So although he ran third, he had two good horses behind him. And I mean, his racing, you always have to hope your horse shows up, but I feel like if he shows up and runs his race, he's going to take a lot of beating today.
His last start with John Service before he came to your barn was a sixth-place finish in the Grade 1 Alan Jerkins at Saratoga last year. His previous start before that was a fourth-place finish in the Woody Stevens. When you first got him into your barn and he won that allowance race, did you really think that he could be this caliber? Did you know that early on?
Yeah, well, like, when he came in, he obviously came into a barn as a good horse, and he's probably, as far as the horse has already run, transferring to us, the best horse we've got with credentials that transferred to us after they already run. And we were hopeful that he could run as good and hopefully better. Seeing him come back and win first time out off the layoff, that was a relief. And then from there, we felt pretty confident. He just kept getting better and better. As I said, we put him last time in a spot that is not his best, but he still ran creditable. And I feel like we're back to doing this time what he wants to do.
How long does it take you to figure a horse out when you get him into your barn?
Sometimes you figure out quick. Sometimes you never figure them out. You're always learning with horses, and they're a mystery. Like, as far as sometimes you'll get a hang on a horse pretty quick, and sometimes horses will go 6-7 months, and you can't figure out exactly what's their best thing. It's just different. They're like humans almost. Each human's different. They have likes and stuff, but you get a pretty good idea after a couple of months of having them. And some scenarios, as I said, some horses take much longer to figure out. He's been quite uncomplicated. His only thing was he'll lean out a bit in his races, and we put an extended blink on him that kind of kept him straighter. And I feel like he's one of the best as far as in the sprint division, and hopefully today, fingers crossed, he'll get to show it.
Let's stick with Saratoga for a minute. Tomorrow you are going to saddle one of the favorites in the Grade 2 Amsterdam. That's Drain the Clock. And, boy, what a consistent horse he has been. How long did it take you to figure him out?
Yeah, from his second work, basically, he showed that he was a horse that had ability. And then you have to see it first time out, he won. And I would say he went into the last race as his numbers weren't quite fast enough in Woody Steven, but we always thought that he was winning with something left. So that was his breakthrough performance to say that he's one of the top 3-year-old sprinters. And I thought he beat a horse, Jackie's Warrior, who I have a lot of respect for. A very game horse. A horse that doesn't lose many battles. And he was able to beat him that day. Jackie's Warrior missed the break that day, you would say, in his defense. But I thought he had every chance to beat us, and Drain the Clock was more gutsy than the day. And now we come back, we have to face him again. There's a couple of other horses in the race that are good, obviously. And it's going to be another tight race, a tough race. It's good for racing. I would have liked to run against Jackie's Warrior again, until probably the Alan Jerkins, but our horse is doing good, and we got to run them when they're doing well.
Yeah, you have to run them when they're doing well. By the way, visiting with Safi Joseph Jr. here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jackie's Warrior, you mentioned how talented that horse is, and now you get the rematch. Safi, do trainers, I know you're a fan of the sport first and foremost, but do trainers get pumped up and get a little extra pep in their step when they know that they're going to get a rematch against a really good horse?
I mean, I'd rather not have the rematch just yet. Probably one of the bigger days, but as I said, he's in good form. He seems like he's come forward from the Woody Stevens, which is kind of hard to believe that you'd think he's moved forward again. But he's showing that kind of in his training and how he's feeling. So we're just hopeful that everything goes to plan and may the best horse win on the day.
One thing that gets overlooked, and I've heard this from many trainers in talking to them over the years, Safi, is that, you know, it's one of the goals, and Todd Pletcher talks about this a lot, is for the owners, for the breeders of the horse, you want to get graded stakes status for a horse that you train and ultimately get them to win a Grade 1 race. You've now done that with Drain the Clock, and you've done it with Mischievous Alex. How critical is that? I mean, how much of a focus do you put on that with your program?
I mean, it's huge, especially for Drain. I mean, for every horse that could win a Grade 1, if they're a colt, you're trying to make them a stallion. And as far as the fillies, you're making them valuable broodmares. But Drain the Clock, in his sense, he's a homebred from Nick Casados of Slam Dunk Racing. So that was a huge achievement, not only for Nick to breed his first Grade 1 winner, to he had the mare still. So it made the mare so much more valuable also. So it was a very, very big win for all parties as far as just winning the race, but the brood mare line for Nick and everyone involved.
You know, I can remember when you just had a couple of horses in on a particular card down in Florida, and now you're running horses in Saratoga, you're running horses in Florida today, and you're running a pretty talented filly at Monmouth in the greatest stake there, the Monmouth Oaks, hoping to get her some black type. That's all worthy. She comes in on a two-race winning streak. She makes her stakes debut. Tell me a little bit more about her.
Yeah, she's a progressive filly. Kind of never, probably like 4 or 5 weeks before she ever ran, she started to get really like show ability. Before that, she had just seemed average, and her two runs first time out were pleasing enough, and then we stretched her up to a mile, and she really got good at a mile. She goes into this race training well, and we expect that she should run a bang-up race, hopefully.
Where do you watch all these races? How do you do it? Do you watch on your phone through an ADW? Do you try to find a TV? How do you see all your other horses all over the country?
A bit of both. I mean, I'm in Saratoga for today, so the other ones I'll try to watch them on my phone, or I try to get to a TV at a track and watch it. And they never get old. As far as each one you lose, you feel disappointed, and each one you win, you just feel thankful. And the feeling that winning is priceless, and then the disappointment it never changes. You always, if you run bad, you always feel like disappointed for a while, but you gotta win or lose, you gotta continue moving forward and keep moving forward in this game. You can't dwell too much, or you can't get too excited, because there's no time for it.
What are the chances that the Saffy Joseph Jr. barn sweeps both of the stakes races down at Gulfstream today?
At Gulfstream, we're gonna scratch out a colt race. We're just gonna run in a filly race at Gulfstream.
Okay. All right, so no chance that you actually sweep them, but tell me about the two fillies then in the Desert Vixen.
Solo Girl's going to scratch also. We just entered there to see how the race looked, and the owner that owned both of them, he didn't want to run. He just wanted to take a look, and he decides he's going to keep them in maiden races. Noble Dreamer, she's the favorite in our race. After her last race, I was very confident, but we missed some time with her. She got sick, and she's only coming in with one work, so it's kind of... I'm kind of reserved on how I feel. I hope that she's good enough to overcome it, but it's not the ideal way you want to come into a stake, but we'll see.
Well, Saffy Joseph Jr., the Bayesian Triple Crown winning trainer, is with me here on the network. He is always very gracious with his time. Saf, listen, man, all the best later today. Go get it done, and all the best tomorrow, too. Let's see if we can get to the winner's circle a few times in some great stakes.
Thank you very much, Mike. Take care.
All right, great stuff, yeah. Saffy Joseph Jr., the man who was responsible for Jude and I making our way to Barbados years ago and broadcasting the Barbados Gold Cup for a couple of years there. It was one of the great experiences that Jude and I have celebrated together and had together on radio. It was fantastic. What a great place. And Saffy, a native of Barbados, does a fantastic job. And I remember the day that yeah, and Jude was friends with Saffy. He introduced me to him. And I can remember the day that we sat down in his barn at Gulfstream to spend an hour with him on Trainer Talk. That was before we ended up going to Barbados. We kind of coordinated that after our conversation with Saffy. But that full hour show is up there as a podcast on our website. And I would highly recommend that you take some time and go back and listen, because Saffy takes us back through the early days. He talks about his family, their involvement in racing in Barbados. And he talks about the highs and the lows. And now he is sitting here and he has built his business and he works tirelessly alongside his father, who helps him as well. And it's a great team. And couldn't happen to nicer people. So head back to horseracingradio.net and just hit the search bar and search for Saffy Joseph Jr. Trainer Talk, or just type in Saffy's name. You'll get a bunch of Saffy interviews, but you'll also get that Trainer Talk show. And do yourself a favor and spend an hour listening to that. He was tremendous, and what a great story it is. Easy to cheer for on this weekend and beyond. All right, when I come back, I'm going to take you on a stroll through racing history with my good friend Kurt Becker, and then we'll turn our attention to the aforementioned pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, to look back on his big win in the Chula Vista, now the Clement L. Hirsch. That was 30 years ago. That's all ahead here on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
All it takes is one race to start a legacy. The Breeders' Cup Challenge Series, worldwide races. 最後は2着に5番が門戸へ上がりました。 multiple chances to earn an automatic berth, all expenses and fees paid.
Fort Larned comes into the stretch in front. Mucho Macho Man runs at him with 1 furlong to run.
To the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
This is unbelievable! Zenyatta, what a performance, one we'll never forget.
Where a share of $31 million in purses and awards wait.
As an owner, I love the Breeders' Cup winning your in-series.
You can get a free entry into the Breeders' Cup, and everybody wants to run in a Breeders' Cup race.
Automatic berth takes a lot of pressure off.
The Breeders' Cup Challenge Series. Win, and you're in.
It's probably the best thing that's happened to racing in the last 10 years.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Live racing is back at Ellis Park with a 31-day Run Happy Meet through September 4th. Admission is free with reserved seating available in the Sky Theater and Clubhouse through ellisparkracing.com. And for the first time, all Ellis Park races will be shown in high definition. Purses are scheduled to average a record $350,000 a day, including Kentucky-bred maidens running for a track record $51,000. With 16 stakes and a 2-year-old program as good as anywhere in the country, Ellis Park is the place to be this summer. Visit ellisparkracing.com. Ellis Park, feel the thunder. It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
They are homeward bound now, and it's all Murray past the eighth pole. It's Murray looking for a danger, but there simply isn't one. Flavian Pratt just got a point. There's one in the right direction. Murray never looked like losing. Canters in.
Murray, the son of Darley Stallion Street Sense, has created quite a buzz with that dominating debut victory at Del Mar on July 25th, earning TDN Rising Star status and your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Street Sense, only Into Mischief, can match his 4 graded stakes winning juvenile dirt colts since 2017. Don't miss the 9 Street Sense yearlings selling at the Fasig Tipton Saratoga Select Sale. Learn more about Street Sense and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
This is Greg Foley, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And they're coming to the top of the stretch. Flame Away put to a drive by Jose Ortiz as Tenfold ranges up alongside. Re-Ride is trying to get involved too. Vino Rosso still well behind as they come to the final furlong, and Tenfold takes charge. Ricardo Santana Jr. and Tenfold have taken the lead, moving away from Flame Away. Vino Rosso kicking it in late. Tenfold is bearing out through the stretch, but Tenfold will win the Jim Dandy. Flame Away held off Vino Rosso for the place, and Re-Ride was fourth in a final time of 1 minute 50.49 seconds.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. This is the Equine Forum. It's presented by our friends at Woodbine Entertainment. And that voice you just heard, NBC announcer Larry Colmus, with the call of Tenfold winning the Jim Dandy in 2018. It was a second win in the Jim Dandy for Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen, who is fast closing in on the all-time leading trainer record in terms of number of wins. Dale Baird has held it for many, many, many years. Steve has been in hot pursuit. He is now just 6 wins shy of equaling Dale Baird. Dale has 9,445 career victories. Steve Asmussen, 9,439. Steve has 29 horses entered over the course of the next 5 days. Not sure if it happens in the next 5 days, but it's going to happen. And it's going to happen probably by the end of August for sure. And more than likely within the next week or two. I have really enjoyed the time I've been able to spend with Steve Asmussen, and he is another one, much like Safi Joseph Jr., who joined me for a full hour on our trainer talk show back at Saratoga, oh gosh, I guess it was 5 or 6 years ago now. And he put the headsets down after we finished, and he said, well, there's a few things that people have probably never heard about his life, his family. That's another one you want to go back and listen to when you get some time. All of our trainer talk shows, which are presented by Fasic Tipton, our podcast for you on our website at horseracingradio.net. But go back in honor of Steve Asmussen, soon to be the all-time leading trainer in the history of thoroughbred racing. It would be a nice way to spend an hour one afternoon. If you're driving in your car, you can Bluetooth it. Highly recommend listening to that show, too, and just search for it in the search bar on our website. Steve Asmussen, absolutely part of the fabric and part of the history of thoroughbred racing. And that leads me into this week's edition of Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. Saratoga Racecourse is often described as the graveyard of favorites. So imagine pulling an upset of such historic proportions that the folks at the spa name a race after you. It was August 16, 1930 in the Travers Stakes when Jim Dandy pulled a 100-1 shocker. And later today, Saratoga will present the 58th running of the Jim Dandy Stakes, a Grade 2 event for 3-year-olds at a mile and an eighth on the dirt. Jim Dandy was bred in Kentucky by William S. Dudley, who was a leader in the coal and tobacco industries of the Bluegrass State. And on Kentucky Derby weekend of 1929, on the backstretch at Churchill Downs, the fledgling juvenile Jim Dandy caught the eye of boxing promoter turned racehorse trainer John McKee. So exkey that he found the nearest telephone and contacted one of his newest clients, a boyish-looking millionaire in Los Angeles by the name of Chaffee Earl, who raced under the name Wilshire Stable. Born into a wealthy family in Oakland, Earl was a media mogul who owned the Los Angeles Herald Express and the L.A.-based radio station KNX at the time. Jim Dandy would become only the second horse owned by Earl, who paid $25,000 for the colt, a sum equal to $400,000 today. And roughly 4 months after the transaction, Jim Dandy went to Saratoga, where he pulled a 30-1 upset in winning the 1929 Grand Union Hotel Stakes for 2-year-olds on a muddy track. Headlines in newspapers around the country proclaimed Jim Dandy's achievement, yet by 1930, it seemed as though hardly anyone remembered. That's because more prominent horses from more prominent stables were taking control of the headlines. Most notably, Gallant Fox, owned by William Woodward, was dominating the spring classics, taking the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont. The day after the Belmont Stakes, on June 8, 1930, newspapers declared that Gallant Fox had already wrapped up the title of champion 3-year-old for the year. The only occasional threat to Gallant Fox seemed to come from Which One, Harry Payne Whitney's champion juvenile of 1929. Which One, in fact, had gone to the post as the favorite in the Belmont Stakes before finishing second by 4 lengths to Gallant Fox in the ring. While all of this was happening, hardly anyone was thinking about Jim Dandy, and even fewer seemed to remember that victory in the mud at Saratoga the prior year. On Travers Day in 1930, only 4 horses went to the post. Gallant Fox was favored at 1-2. Which One, who had tremendous speed but was fragile, was listed at 9-5. For the other two, well, there were Sun Falcon at 40-1 and Jim Dandy, 100-1. They were merely seen as filler material so that the Travers wouldn't be a match race. Owner Chaffee Earl didn't even make the trip from Los Angeles to watch his horse run, saying he didn't feel well and instead would stay at home. Gallant Fox had spent the summer in Chicago winning race after race following his Triple Crown success. Which One had won the Whitney at Saratoga, and so a crowd, which included Governor Franklin Delano Roosevelt, was excited to see a rematch of the 1-2 finishers from the Belmont Stakes, both of whom had enjoyed excellent summer campaigns. Plus, jockey Earl Sandy on Gallant Fox was said to have outsmarted Sonny Workman on Which One in the Belmont. So the theory went, a smarter ride by Workman, and perhaps Which One could turn the tables on Gallant Fox. Instead, on a rain-soaked track at Saratoga, Which One set the pace and faded. Gallant Fox then took the lead, but held it only briefly. and then Jim Dandy took over and drew clear to win the Travers Stakes in a gallop. He was bred to love a wet track. He had won a stakes at Saratoga in the mud a year earlier. And yet, because he had not won a race all year in 1930, and because the public believed he was facing the two best horses in the nation, Jim Dandy had gone to the post for the Travers at odds of 100-1, and he won the race. Jim Dandy was gelded a few months after that Travers upset, and then retired a few years later from racing with a record of only 7 wins in 141 career starts. An article in the Los Angeles Examiner in the 1940s noted that trainer McKee had died and owner Chaffee Earle had left the horse business. But Jim Dandy, well, he was enjoying life at a riding academy in Glendale, California. The article said he had ridden to the hounds, jumps flawlessly, and appears often at horse shows. And back east at Saratoga to this day, they still remember Jim Dandy, as well they should. His name stands as a reminder that, in horse racing, truly anything is possible. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Oh, another fantastic story taking a look back at Jim Dandy on this Jim Dandy Day in Saratoga Springs, New York. My thanks to Kurt and to the folks at Lane's End and to Keeneland for making those segments possible each and every week. You can hear those. If you missed any of them, all those stories are podcast on our website. You can go back and listen at your leisure, horseracingradio.net. Going to get to a break and come back with Jude Feld momentarily, but want to remind you that you can reap the rewards of breeding and racing in Kentucky, and the numbers certainly don't lie. This is your Kentucky Bred Spotlight presented by the KTA KTOB. How about this number? 122,655,688. You're like, okay, Baron, what does that mean? Well, that's the purse money in Kentucky, which hit an all-time high in 2020, significantly higher than California at 104 million, Florida at 106, and New York at $110 million. 78,125. That's the average purse per race in Kentucky in 2020, which far outpaced Florida, California, and New York. 8.8. What does that number mean? It was the average field size in Kentucky in 2020, and you guessed it, higher than California, New York, and Florida. Over $170 million has been distributed to Kentucky breeders since 2006, and with purse money soaring thanks to the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund, the fullest fields in the country, and quality racing year-round, there is absolutely no better time to breed and race in the bluegrass than right now. Find your Kentucky bred at Keeneland September and share in the rewards September 13th to September 24th. For more information, you can visit KentuckyBreds.com or email them at kbif.khrc@ky.gov. Jude Feld coming up next. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Championship racing is at legendary Pimlico Racecourse. Watch and wager as Maryland's best compete in a Saturday Summer Stakes campaign worth nearly $1.5 million in purses. The series continues on July 31st, featuring three match series stakes worth $300,000 and culminating on August 21st with a salute to all things Maryland at the Maryland Pride Maryland Strong Celebration. The Pimlico meet offers live racing Friday through Sunday with a regular post time of 12:40 p.m. Visit the track or catch the live stream at pimlico.com.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. A wide open renewal of the Woodbine Oaks is part of a stakes-filled Sunday card at the Toronto Oval. Lorena and Julie Marie will put their respective unbeaten records on the line in the $500,000 Woodbine Oaks, one of four stakes on Sunday's 11-race card. Inaugurated in 1956, the Philly Classic has attracted 10 Canadian-fold three-year-old fillies, carrying 120 pounds over a mile and an eighth on the Tapeta. It will go postward as race eight at approximately 4:46 Eastern. Sunday's card also features the $150,000 plate trial stakes, a key race ahead of the Queen's Plate on August 22nd, the Grade 2 $175,000 Royal North Stakes, and the Grade 3 $150,000 Vigil Stakes.
Jockey Gary Boulanger, who was inducted into the Canadian Horse Racing Hall of Fame in 2020, will look to win his second Oaks aboard Lorena 20 years after guiding Samsung Farms Dance Through the Dawn to victory in both the Oaks and Queen's Plate. Fellow unbeaten Jillie Marie will be a formidable foe, receiving high praise from her trainer, Katerina Vasileva, who was quoted as saying, "She's a really gritty filly. She has a lot of heart. She's such a small horse in stature, but she has a ton of heart. She tries so hard in all of her races. She's fearless. She's patient. She has all the right qualities of a really good racehorse." But don't count out Curlin's Catch in this year's Oaks. A bay daughter of Curlin, who brings a record of 2-1-1 from 7 starts into this year's edition. Trained by Hall of Famer Mark Cassie, who is chasing his 4th Oaks win, most recently with Seeley Hill in 2007 and Lexi Liu in 2014. Both fillies went on to be named Canadian Horse of the Year. First post Sunday is 1:10 p.m., and that's your North of the Border report for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit Woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTB.
This is jockey Julien Lepau, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you from the heart of the Bluegrass, Lexington, Kentucky. Our Lexington studios here this morning, and happy to have you back with me on the program. It's been a very busy morning. It continues with our industry star of the week, presented by Stuart Morris, who, of course, offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is absolutely because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years that include Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, and recent 2021 stakes winners Pacific Gal and Nikki the Vest, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all the major sales. And when you celebrate a 30-year anniversary, I think it's appropriate that you be named the Industry Star of the Week, and that is exactly the case with the man we call the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Pope Jude, Jude Feld, who 30 years ago saddled Veal Vin to win the Grade 2 Chula Vista, which is now the Clement L. Hirsch. He is with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. JT, good morning, my friend.
Good morning. It's fantastic to be here.
Yeah, happy anniversary. How about that? 30 years ago, Veal Vin.
I know. Shocking. Absolutely shocking when you think about it. I mean, I remember that day like it was yesterday. It's crazy it was 30 years ago.
When you hear the name Veal Vin, what's the first thing that pops into your head?
Dick Gason, one of her owners. Dick has been a good friend, an excellent client for many years, and we go back a long ways. We had a lot of fun at the races together, whether we were running one or not, just hanging out at the track. And she was a tremendous filly, a big boost to my career, and I always think of her fondly.
Yeah, and I told you when I called you and asked you about coming on the program that you got ripped off, because that was a Grade 2 back then. It is now a Grade 1, the Clement L. Hirsch, which will be run tomorrow at Del Mar. Only a Grade 2, but I say that with the utmost respect. What an unbelievable victory that was.
Yeah, it was crazy. I'm not one to shoot my mouth off about my horses. I usually let them do the talking. But that week, I was interviewed by somebody from the Forum, and I don't remember if it was Jay Hovde or Jay Privman or who it was, maybe Mike Martin. Somebody interviewed me, and I said, you know, she's going to win this race. And they kind of rolled their eyes like, oh, God, Jude's lost it, you know. He's running against Light and Brought to Mind and Veal Vin. She'd won the Bayakoa Stakes, which is what used to be the traditional prep for the Chula Vista. And, she was just doing so well. She loved Del Mar. She had a bit of a bad back, and she'd get down there and be out in the sunshine. And I had the chiropractor work on her that week, and she was just training unbelievably great, and I was confident she was going to win. She went off at 19-1, and if you listen to a lot of people talk about her when they see me at the track or whatever, you'd think she would have been 3-5. That was light that was 3-5, and we were 19-1. But it was a very exciting day. It was a crazy day. I had horses running in Chicago. I had one in the Beverly D, and Mr. D was kind of irritated with me for not coming to Chicago, but I had horses in two stakes at Del Mar, one Saturday and one Sunday, and ended up winning both of those stakes races at Del Mar. And I sent my assistant, Augustine Perez, to saddle Lock Caldoon in the Beverly D. And she ran a tremendous race that day. She went 109.3, going a mile and 3/16. I was a little upset with Georgie Velasquez, but anyway, you can't win them all, and we won 2 out of 3. It was a big weekend for our stable.
Well, the other thing you mentioned when I called and asked you to join me on the program this morning was that day Villevin won the Chula Vista. That entire week, you received a huge assist from your good friend Aaron Wellman, who was working with you at the time. Aaron is now a prominent owner in the sport through his Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners, and I thought it would be nice if Aaron were to join us this morning and help look back on that special day too, and he is. He's with us up early in California. So, Aaron, good morning, my friend. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary, JT.
Thank you, sir. That was a great day.
It was absolutely one of the greatest days in racing for me. I can't believe when Mike called me yesterday and said it's been 30 years since Villevin won the Chula Vista at Del Mar. I still feel like I'm 13 years old, so I don't know how that's possible, but it was, and it was one of the greatest days I can remember in racing for sure.
Yeah, it was such a big deal for us because, you know, we never had that many horses always, you know, 12, 14, kind of a small stable, but, you know, she was a star, and she loved Del Mar like you and I, you know, kind of love the beach, love going to Del Mar. And of course your parents, have a house down there, and I guess you live there now too. Like my kids, nobody ever wants to leave Del Mar.
No doubt about it. It was a very special day. And Mike, as Jude was just recounting, you know, we had a small stable, but Jude was pretty stretched out that weekend with runners at Arlington and at Del Mar. So one thing that Jude was never shy about was giving a young guy or an ambitious guy or a girl, that for that matter, a shot in the industry. And with his stable staff sort of split between Chicago and Del Mar that week, he gave me an unbelievable opportunity to rub Villevin leading up to the race, and it was just totally wild. You know, nobody on earth would ever do that with a kid that had just turned 14 years old, but Jude had all the confidence in the world in me, and as he said, the filly had some problems that we had to work on through the week to get her there, but she was doing so good. And I just remember it was such a wild scene because Light was owned by MC Hammer. MC Hammer was coming to Del Mar. All the spotlight was on him. It was just complete mania at Del Mar. I think he might have even helicoptered into the infield to get there, if my memory serves me correctly. But all the attention was on her, and we were just little guys flying in way underneath the radar. But we had so much confidence. I remember she came out of the paddock, and we handed her off to the pony. And Jude and I, this is when the old grandstand was at Del Mar, and we went upstairs behind the seats where we used to sit and watch the races way up high. And we emptied out our pockets on Villevin after we saw her warm up. And I know I had a whopping $9 in my pocket and put it all straight on the nose at 19.5-1. And it was just such a thrilling race because there was so much energy in the air. And Martin Pedroza put her in the right spot every step of the way. And as Martin was known to do, he certainly got busy on her that last 3/16 of a mile. She opened up a half length and held off Gary Jones's formidable lady to win by a half. But it was just so exhilarating, and I'll never forget the next morning. JT and I used to go to the barn every morning, 4:30, from the time I was 8 until the time I graduated law school. He and I were together going to his barn at Del Mar, And we would stop at the AMPM right across the street from the racetrack and get a cup of coffee and a San Diego Union Tribune. And that next morning after Light got beat by Villevin, the headline on the front page of the sports section was, "The tune of the day at Del Mar went from Can't Touch This to Hey Jude." And it was just epic. Really, really cool.
Fantastic. Jude, do you remember that headline?
Yeah, I do. I remember Aaron being so excited when we got the newspaper. We kind of had our routine, like you said, from the time he was 8 years old to he went to college. You know, we went to the barn together every morning, except when his mom had things for him to do where he couldn't go, and he'd always let me know ahead of time that he wasn't going to be there. But usually he was waiting on my front porch for me to walk out the door at 4:30, and we had some great summers and some great times. And you know, he knew the ins and outs of horse racing from the time he was a kid, really. And he started out, you know, like rubbing the pony and that kind of stuff, and he just, you know, took to it naturally. And it's not a surprise to me that he's turned out to be so successful in our business, because you know, he knows horses from the ground up. He's not just somebody that decided they wanted to have a stable. I mean, this guy knows what he's doing. He knows what he's looking at, and you know, it's been a real pleasure to see him have the success that he's had, because you know, I remember him the first day he was coming to the track with me. He was sitting next to my dirty barn shoes on my front porch at 4:30 in the morning. He had asked me the day before if he could go to the track with me, and there he was. I walked out the door, and here's this little guy. And we did that for many moons, as they say. So it was really great to share that with him, and to have that kind of success was a big deal for us, because we didn't have that many top class horses, but managed to win 7 graded stakes overall in my career and 24 stakes overall. But Del Mar was always a very special place for myself and for Aaron and for our families. So that made it even more special.
Aaron, when I talked to Doug O'Neill, who also spent time working with Jude back in the early days, he always says that he would be flipping burgers if it wasn't for Jude Feld. So I'll ask you, what would you be doing if it wasn't for Jude Feld?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that after you called, Mike. So many guys went through Jude's program. For a small guy that really never had a big operation or a huge shot like Jude, you know, you go through the guys that he gave a shot to and really started off in the industry. And it's pretty remarkable. A guy like Doug, I mean, he's won multiple derbies and Breeders' Cups and stuff like that. But, yeah, I don't know if I'd be flipping burgers per se, but something close to it. Maybe working in Dairy Queen. What do you think, dude? Maybe something like that.
I think you would have been probably a big time lawyer or something. You always had you know, other aspirations, but I think really now you're doing what you love, and that's very important. So yeah, we've had some good guys go through. Donnie Chatlos won a Breeders' Cup. Of course, P. Miller, he wins a training title at Del Mar almost every year. He was another guy that grew up with you and used to hang out with me and worked for me for 3 years, was my assistant. And you know, I mean, it's just an incredible group of guys. And I know, you know, my longtime client, Michael House, one of his favorite photos was a picture of Broadway Point winning a race at Hollywood Park with Doug O'Neill and Pete Miller in the picture. They were both stable employees. And now those two guys, you know, they've won, I don't know how many training titles between the two of them, a bunch. But Mr. House used to show that picture to everybody that came to the farm. He thought that was really cool.
Yeah, well, yeah, listen. Aaron, that's fine. Listen, Aaron, I want to get to Jude and have him handicap the Clemenel Hirsch, which is going to take place tomorrow, and again, formerly known as the Chula Vista. But I really appreciate you getting up early out there in California and joining us live on the show this morning to look back on that day with Vielvin 30 years ago. It's hard to believe that it was 30 years since Vielvin, but it is. And really appreciate you taking some time, my friend. Thanks so much, and continued success with Eclipse Thoroughbred.
Thank you, guys. I don't want to cut into Jude's handicapping time. Real quick, the last time Vielvin ran in the Chula Vista was 93. She won it in 91, but she actually got beat by Magical Maiden by a head. And that year, Vielvin was 42-43-1. And I thought it was just interesting because Magical Maiden was owned by Clement Hirsch, who now the Chula Vista is named after, of course. And that was a pretty special occasion, too, even though Vielvin got beat. And she retired on a high note, even though she got beat that head. But pretty special that now the race is named after Clement Hirsch. So pretty cool stuff. But thanks for having me on. JT, congrats. Happy anniversary. And pick some winners today. And thanks for having me on, Mike.
Yeah, what a fantastic way to end it. And I know exactly what Aaron Wellman would be doing if it wasn't for Jude Feld. He'd be a big-time broadcaster somewhere with that kind of research. Fantastic. Great delivery. And Aaron, appreciate it, my friend. All right, I guess he's gone. But, Jude, let's turn our attention to this year's Clemenel Hirsch, which will take place at Del Mar tomorrow. I told listeners that we'd get your thoughts on this one. Seven horses. It features last year's Kentucky Oaks heroine, She Dares the Devil. It's going to be race number 9 with a post time of 9 o'clock Eastern. That's 6 o'clock local time on the West Coast. How'd you see the Clemenel Hirsch?
Well, you know, Baffert's got the morning line favorite as time goes by, and she's a wonderful filly. She's run 7 times, won 4 races. She's been in the money all 7 times. So I think she's a formidable foe, but I picked She Dares the Devil. She's a multiple grade 1 winner. I think maybe her last race, she might have needed a little bit. She's been working good leading up to this one. I know she didn't draw the best post and all that, but she's a really good filly. Florent Giroux's coming out to ride her. He usually rides her, and I think she's going to be super tough to beat. She's 7-5 on the morning line. She's 7-5, and Baffert's filly's 8-5. And then I thought Venetian Harbor had a shot, but maybe the race is a little long for her. Her best long race has been a mile, and the 2 times she's run a mile in the 16th, she's gotten a little late the last 16th of a mile. But I think that's the contention right there. It's a pretty chalky race this year. I don't think there's going to be a 19-1 winner like Vielvin was.
Yeah, probably not. Well, that's the Clemenel Hirsch for tomorrow at Del Mar, a win in your end. That you have the win in your end. Bing Crosby later today. And Jude, you told me you put together a Pope Jude sheet, so people can go to PopeJude.com and they can get the Pope Jude sheet for today, which features what, Saratoga and Del Mar?
Saratoga and Del Mar, the resort tracks. So good cards at both places, and it's going to be a great day of racing, I think. I'm really looking forward to it.
All right, brother. Well, listen, I appreciate you joining me, and congrats on being the industry star of the week on this Saturday morning, and happy anniversary.
Yeah, thank you. It was quite an honor, and nice to have Aaron share it with me, and it brings back a lot of great memories. You know, the one of the best memories was Mr. Burrell, MC Hammer's dad, came in to cash a check. He said, the boys want to bet some exactas. And I was thinking, oh, I hope you use Vielvin, you know. And I don't think they did. But they finished third anyway, so the exactas went down the tubes. So Tom Canoose was the racing secretary, and he says, Mr. Burrell, how much do you need? And he says, oh, I don't know, 15 or 20,000. So he's writing a check for 20 grand to bet exactas. And then Vielvin spoils the party, But it was a great day for me, and MC Hammer had lots of great days, I'm sure, so I don't feel too bad.
Yeah, what started out as Can't Touch This ended as Hey Jude. I love that headline in the paper out there in Del Mar 30 years ago. JT, appreciate the visit, my friend, and good luck at the races today.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it.
Back with more right after this. It's the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
Standing at the edge of a rocky shore, you breathe in the cool, salty air, watching the sun disappear on the horizon. Across the globe, someone begins their day. Wonder and beauty is now a dull, lifeless wasteland. Food, jobs, medicine, all gifts from the ocean, all gone. Time is running out to protect our oceans. And without our love, everything the oceans provide can and will disappear. It's our choice. Love it or lose it. Help protect our oceans. Visit World Wildlife Fund at wwf.org/love.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is jockey Brian Hernandez. For me, there's no bigger thrill than crossing the finish line in front, and nobody captures the excitement of our sport like Horse Racing Radio Network. Each week, HRRN brings you exclusive talk shows, podcasts, and in-depth conversations with the biggest names in racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, and more. Plus, HRRN is committed to helping disabled riders through their support of the PDJF. So climb aboard a winner today by visiting horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is Calvin Burrow. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, going to take a look at some historical notable dates in racing history in just a moment, but want to update you first on the poll question this morning. So many of you taking time to weigh in. I really do appreciate that. You can go to @HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, or if you don't do that, you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net, with your thoughts on this week's poll question. It's presented by OwnerView and the Thoroughbred Owner Conference. Which morning line favorite is most likely to win today? And we gave you three choices: CZ Rocket in the Bing Crosby, Mischievous Alex in the AG Vanderbilt, or Channel Maker in the Bowling Green. And so far, it's starting to tighten up a little bit, but so far, 40% of you are saying it's CZ Rocket, the most likely morning line favorite to get a victory among those three choices later today. You're going to hear, by the way, from the man who's going to try to knock off CZ Rocket and make sure that he's not the morning line favorite that wins. That's Mark Glatt, who sends out defending champion Collusion Illusion in the Bing Crosby. He has three horses in there, as a matter of fact. He's going to join me for our Road to the Breeders' Cup segment coming up at 10:45 Eastern. Sean Bridgemahan will be with me at 10:30 talking about riding at Woodbine. And we'll go in the room with Sean Clancy in just about 5 minutes at 10 o'clock Eastern as he sits down for a 20-minute one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with Angel Cordero Jr. You will not want to miss it, so stay tuned for that coming up shortly. All right, time now to take a look at a few notable dates in racing history that are taking place today and throughout the next couple of days. Well, it was July 31st, 1972, that Secretariat, ridden for the first time by Ron Turcotte, won his second race in three starts on opening day at Saratoga. The pair were sent off at odds of 2-5. No surprise there. August 1st, tomorrow, 1945, is the anniversary of open racing resuming in place of the wartime restricted or zoned system in England. August 2nd, 1864, that would be Monday, the 147-year anniversary of America's oldest thoroughbred racetrack, Saratoga Racecourse, opening for its inaugural meet with 4 days of racing. Since then, it has been the site of some of racing's most famous upsets, including Man of War, who suffered his only loss in 21 starts while racing at Saratoga, and Triple Crown champion Gallant Fox, who was defeated by a 100-1 shot by the name of Jim Dandy in the 1930 Travers. You heard the story earlier from Kurt Becker in his Stroll Through Racing History, talking about that upset and talking about Jim Dandy, and you can go back and listen on the podcast for that one too. August 2nd, 1969 was the day that jockey Robin Smith, one of the first female jockeys in the U.S., won her first career race. She did that at Ferndale, and that's some notable historic dates for today and over the course of the next couple of days. Again, busy third hour of the program coming up. If you missed any portion of the program so far, and it has been busy, kicked off at 8 o'clock Eastern. By 8:15, I was visiting with Dave Grenning of the Daily Racing Forum. Dave was fantastic walking through what is a huge program in Saratoga Springs, New York today. He also talked a little bit about the leading jockey, Luis Saez, and the leading trainer, Mike Maker. And I asked Dave which one of those is more surprising, seeing Luis Saez atop the jockey standings at this point, or Mike Maker atop the trainer standings. And he said Mike Maker. I would agree 100%. Luis Saez has been a top rider in this sport for many, many years, and he is having a banner year. Mike Maker is a top trainer, but when you think about Saratoga, you don't think about Mike Maker. You think about Todd Pletcher. You think about Chad Brown. Those are the guys that come to mind. Right now, Mike Maker is the leader in the clubhouse atop the trainer standings in Saratoga Springs, New York. Cormac Brennick was with me, the Keeneland Director of Sales. He was with me at 8:35. Safi Joseph Jr. was here talking about his contenders this weekend. You heard from Jude Feld and Aaron Wellman just a short time ago. Again, busy third hour, 2 hours down, one to go, and it's loaded. This week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy comes your way in just a few minutes, and again, a must-listen with Angel Cordero Jr. And then at 10:30 Eastern, I welcome jockey Sean Bridgemahan, who has moved his tack to Woodbine this season, and I will wrap up the show by going down the road to the Breeders' Cup with trainer Mark Glad as he gets set to send out a trio of contenders in today's Win and You're In, Bing Crosby. If your local station is indeed leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the third hour of the show nationwide on Sirius 219, XM 201, in Louisville, Kentucky on ESPN 680, or streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net. Hour three is next after I pause 10 seconds for station identification.